So if you actually strength train and you do some jump training and power training, it'll probably actually make you more efficient at running, and you actually might run faster. So in the long run, in the short run, you might run faster. In the long run, you'll definitely run faster.
DizRun's Radio, episode 1231 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey, y'all. Real quick, before we dive into today's episode of the show, if you're thinking about getting on board with a coach, maybe taking that next step in your running, maybe getting a little help, taking something off your plate in terms of the planning, the preparation, and the should I do this, should I do that, maybe you want a little extra accountability, which is something that there's a fair few of the Diz runners that I think are on board, at least in large part, because they know that they want to race. They don't always know that they want to do the work to be ready to race. But they know that if your boy is checking in on them a couple few times a week, maybe even more often than that, that helps. That helps a little bit sometimes. Shoot, I'm not one to deny the fact that sometimes having people check in on me and in other areas of life, but even sometimes the running. I know if I take a few days off, some of you clowns notice on Strava, you start to chime in a little bit. Dude, what's going on? So sometimes that accountability piece is a big piece of the puzzle. But one way or the other, we've got openings at all three levels: coterie, one-to-one, concierge, whichever one fits your budget, whichever one has the level of interaction, the appropriate bells and whistles that's what you're looking for. Not everybody wants the fancy bougie plan, which is fine. Not everybody wants the mid-tier plan. Not everybody wants just give me a plan and check in with me. But, I want a little more than that. That's fine. We got different options, different strokes for different folks. But we do have openings right now currently at all three levels. So if that's something that might be interested to you, find out a little bit more, get your questions answered. If you have questions, of course, reach out. But dizruns.com/coaching is a good place to start. A little bit of information about all three levels, what's included, what's not, what the costs are. And then if something's intriguing, you can obviously dig into that level deeply at each page that's specific for that level. But the links are all right there. You can find it real simply from dizruns.com/coaching. So if you have any questions, let me know. If you're ready to get started, that information's right there too. Click the buttons. Let's rock and roll. Let's make something happen. But now, without any further ado, let's go ahead and dive in to today's episode of the show. Hey, y'all. Today's guest is back for round two, which, if memory serves, was more or less an inevitability when we chatted the first time. I think even in the intro, I was like, yeah, we're probably going to talk to this guy again. By the time we got to the end, I was like, yeah, we're definitely going to do this again. And now here we are doing this again. I'm not making any promises this time, but maybe this is the second of three or four. I don't know. We'll see what the future holds, but certainly excited for a second chat. Since then, which I believe we're about a year and a half out, I think the first time we chatted was October of 2022, and here we are coming to you just in the early part of April 2024, just for timestamp sake. He's still doing the physical therapy thing, working primarily with runners, other athletes as well. Obviously still logging his own miles when he can, where he can, as consistently as possible. But the big update, and certainly something that's going to be a big focus of today's conversation, is that his new book is finally out. As anyone who's written a book knows, or if you've been paying attention around here, it's not as quick and easy as we sometimes think it's going to be, but he's been working on it. It's a good one. I got a little sneak peek. 10 out of 10 would recommend. But the book title is Built to Run: The Runner's Guide to Fixing Common Injuries, Resolving Pain, and Optimizing Running Performance Now and for Life. We're going to be talking about that a lot, some of the things that are going on in the book. Who knows where else we'll get to. So let's not waste any more time here with the pre-show banter, or whatever, the intro banter. Let's get to it and welcome returning guest Dr. Matt Silver to the show. Matt, thanks for coming back. Thanks for joining us again, and welcome back.
Yeah, thanks, Denny. And I think I had mentioned at the end of the last podcast we did, I'm like, hey, I'm working on this thing. It's on the down low. I think it would be a great time to come back out once it's done. And you were like, heck yeah, let's do it. And it's done. It's finally done. So I'm excited, man.
No, I'm glad to have you back. And like we did before, I mean, we talked a lot about kind of, various injuries and you know, some of that type of stuff that's big on my list of things I always enjoy talking about from a, you know, athletic training perspective, physical therapy perspective. We'll get into some of that again. But y'all, if you enjoyed today's episode, if you haven't connected with Matt before, alphaprojectphysio.com is the website. That's physio with a Z. So alphaprojectphysio, PHYZIO.com. Instagram, couple different handles. There's the Alpha Project Physio, kind of the business Instagram handle, which Matt posts a lot of stuff there. But he also has his more personal, still work related, still PT related, but more of his part of the business at Matt Silver PT, both on Instagram. You can connect with him at either of those places. Lots of good information, lots of good educational stuff that will help you with your running. Again, at both of those, at Alpha Project Physio, physio with a Z on Instagram, and at Matt Silver PT on Instagram as well. Disruns.com/1094. Episode 1094 was round one. We're not going to dive deep back. We're not going to revisit all of Matt's running history and our shared commiseration on splitting wood and hauling wood in the wintertime to heat the house as children, child labor back in our youth. But you can get all of Matt's background, kind of where he got started in running, things like that in round one. Again, that's episode 1094, probably still available on most podcasting apps if you scroll back that far. And today's episode, disruns.com/1231. I'll get you back to the show notes for today. Updated links, obviously links to the book. All those kind of good things will be available for today's episode. Disruns.com/1231. 1231, I think, is that what I said? Anyway, that's what the actual number is if I said it wrong the first time. Anyway, Matt, the way we start off the show, you know, you're welcome back to the second time, third time, fourth time, doesn't matter. We still start with the same question. Sometimes the answer is the same. Sometimes things evolve over time and there's something a little different to go. But we're going to start off the same way we started last time by asking, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
Yeah. Thought about this a little bit. I'm like, I know you're going to ask it. So I'm actually, there's a half marathon in Frederick I'm probably going to sign up for. The book has been taken, you know, I finally finished it. The book was taking a lot of my time, but I'm like, I have a little more time to train now. So part of me wants to say half, but I still really enjoy, from a distance running standpoint, the middle, I call it middle distances, like that 5K. I do like the mile. It's hard to really race it. There's not too many of those, but I enjoy the 5K, man. It's a good distance. It's fast. You feel horrible that last mile, but I like going fast.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have a fairly well-established track record of being anti-5K. You know, you do you. You know, I think it's a great race. It's just not a race that I enjoy. That's where my anti-5K comes from, because, you know, you say you hurt for the last mile. I would argue you hurt from the first step. If you're really racing it hard, I mean, maybe you don't hurt at step one, but it's uncomfortable from step one. And then that uncomfort just grows until you get to the finish line when you're just selling out to try to get through that 3.1 miles as fast as possible.
It's just 19, 20, 18 minutes. That's all it is. Just 20 minutes, a third of an hour, you're done.
Yeah. But it's a long 20. Like I'd rather have that long last hour of a marathon where you're digging a little bit, but you know, you're just grinding. I don't know. That sometimes that hour feels shorter than that 20 minutes. But again, to each your own. And one of the beauties of the sport of running is that, you know, if you want to, you know, I talk to people going, you know, 100 mile ultras, and they're like, oh God, like marathons, those are just so hard and so fast. And I'm like, really? But I mean, I guess compared to 100 miles, it's just, you know, there's all the variation of the sport.
Yeah, it's all relative, man. If pain cave for 20 minutes, or do I do a small pain cave for 2 hours? To each his own.
Yep, absolutely. So, normally this is where we would jump into kind of running history. Like I said, we got into all that pretty well in round one. But one thing, I went back and listened to the episode this morning just to kind of refresh my memory on some of your story. And one thing that, you know, as is often the case, you mentioned something that sounded good, but you were a part of a story and you kept going and the story evolved. And I never kind of came back to answering this question or asking this question. So I'll try to set the table as best as I can. But this is kind of bridging the gap between some of your history and obviously the book, which we're going to get into in depth here before too much longer. But you had mentioned something along the lines of, you know, you dealt with this injury that kind of pretty much sidetracked your running, sidelined your running. You're in PT school, you're focused on profession and growing that way. And as you were kind of working through things, I believe the quote was, I apologize for not having it the whole, you know, it's a 2-minute clip or whatever. But that you kind of learned how to treat runners by helping to treat yourself. Kind of that process of taking what you had learned in PT school and the basics and like really kind of customizing it towards more of runners' needs, runners, the issues that we runners have, based primarily on your experience, and then building from there and you know, dot, dot, dot. That's kind of how the beginning portion of how you got to where you are professionally in your career and really working with runners. And as I was listening to it this morning, I was like, I can't remember what he said on this. And I never asked the follow-up question of kind of what was that process of learning how to treat runners. So hopefully that was enough to kind of trigger your memory and kind of take you back to that place in your you know, college days, your grad school days. But can you kind of get into a little bit of that process of you know, taking what you learned in PT school and then really kind of adapting it and molding it to fit more of the running model as opposed to just the general population, general athlete, general just folks that you might treat off the street at a typical PT clinic?
Yeah, it was like PT school was great. The one problem I think that maybe if someone goes to physio school, and especially in the States, is there's a lot of things that I learned that don't really relate to like the niche I'm in now, which is runners. I see a lot of lifters and CrossFitters as well, but especially runners. It gives you you're at a base level when you get out of physio school, physical therapy school. You know how to not do harm, right? You know how to, you're probably not going to hurt somebody, but it gives you this blueprint of, hey, you can start out, but I think an issue I think a lot of PTs might make is they become a little bit better at being a generalist versus saying, hey, I want to become really good at one thing. And that was what happened out of PT school was, I mean, at that point I'd still given up on running. If I were to go run, I'd be like 2 miles, knee would hurt. I'm like, all right, it's over. Like I'm done. So that was actually me. I think for maybe my first, I did a travel job and then I came to Maryland and Virginia. And that first like half a year, I kind of stumbled around trying to figure out what to do. And I realized like, man, if I'm going to treat myself, I really have to like become the running expert and treat myself first. And that's when I started learning from the people who were, in my opinion, the best in the business. There's Doug Adams, he's in Delaware, Kelly Starrett, who just really knows mobility. I learned from all these people and I'm like, oh man, I am super stiff. Like I can't get into a deep squat. My ankles are tight. Like I can't lay on a foam roller without my quads just screaming at me. So at first it was learning, hey, let's do a lot of mobility work. Which surprisingly, we didn't learn much of that in PT school. We did a good amount with like joint stuff and mobilizing joints, but man, learning mobility, I had to learn that outside of it. But it came easy because I kind of knew the body. So the physio school set me up for that. Once I learned mobility, I just connected all the dots. So I did a lot of mobility work that helped me get through a lot of that knee issue and then a lot of running form as well. So those were two big things, was the mobility and the running form. Then I was able to run like, oh man, I could run 6 miles, no issue. But then I'm like, oh, I need to strength train too, because I didn't do as much strength training because I was so stiff and tight and it just hurt my back and my knees. And so I eventually evolved from working on mobility and running form. And then I was able to add a lot more strength training in. And that's when then using, you know, back squatting heavier weights, deadlifting heavier weights. So that was the process. It probably took a good 6 months to a year. I don't know exactly how long it took Denny to kind of rehab myself back to being able to run. And then I believe I did the Gettysburg half marathon and no knee pain. I'm like, this is great. I have a photo. I think I sent it to you of me doing that my first half marathon after getting back into running. I'm going to make sure I send that to you because it's a cool photo. It's got like the cannons in the background and stuff because through like the battlefield. I don't know if they changed it, but I love that half marathon. That's kind of my process. It took a while, but it was a lot of things outside of physio school set me up for success. I don't want, you know, take anything from that, but it was niching down and saying, I really want to treat runners and I really have to treat myself first. That was a lot of the motivation, but it put me on the path of once I became really good at treating runners, it then expanded into I can treat these other athletes as well.
Right, right. It's, I don't want to say it's amazing because maybe it's not amazing, but it's amazing ironically amazing. How much more fun running is when you're not hurting all the time, when you can run for, you know, whether it's a half an hour, whether it's an hour, whether it's 3 hours, like whatever your fitness level is, whatever your goals are. But when you can do that and then not be walking around like you're, no disrespect to the 80s and 90s and the centenarians out there, but like you're not walking around like you're 50 years older than you are, 60 years older than you are. You finish your run and then you go about the rest of your day. You're not laid up, you're not sore, things like that. Yet sadly, you know, I don't know what the exact statistics are. I've heard, 50% of runners are going to be injured at some point in a year. Whether it's a little bit higher, a little bit lower, it's still way too high for what I think it should be. Again, maybe from some of your PT work, from your just professional work focused on runners, your running itself, whichever angle makes the most sense to ask this or answer this question, or at least maybe discuss the question. Why are we as a population of athletes as in general health conscious folks, right? I mean, we're running, we're physically active, like we're trying to take care of our bodies. And a lot of us, we enjoy running, but it's a big part of our health plan for the next 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years of our lives to be able to play with our grandkids, maybe play with our great grandkids. We want to run to maintain our health. Yet so many of us are injured, whether it's serious injuries, whether it's just constant niggles, constant things that are sidelined for a couple of weeks. And here's it, the plantar fasciitis is flaring up again. The IT band is pissy yep. again. Why do we suck so much at assuming that injuries are a necessary part of the problem? We just got to deal with it, or else we can't run.
Yeah, that's the $1 million question, Denny. And I'm gonna elaborate on it. I might forget the question you asked. So don't let me forget it.
I forgot the question I asked already. So we're
so I was like, why are runners so bad at staying injury free?
Right.
I think there's a lot of reasons why. I think there's probably two big ones. One thing is the name of the game is controlling the forces on your body. Or in other words, controlling, it's called loading rates. So when I have a whiteboard next to me, if I had it drawn out for the book, I wish I still had it here, but it's essentially when you hit the ground, the moment you hit the ground to when your foot comes off the ground, there's ground reaction forces in the vertical direction, which is you push down on the ground pushes back up, in the horizontal direction, which is if you push the ground in front of you, like you're kicking it, it'll kick back at you. And then also laterally to the side. I'm not going to worry about the lateral one because that's not as much. But those ground reaction forces there's the force that's applied to your body. There's a speed to it. And that when you have those vertical ground reaction force graphs, it shows you how fast the force is being applied and also how fast it is, how high, how much force it is. So when we're running, most of the running issues are chronic overuse, right? You're not a football player, not getting slide tackled and you tear your ACL. Runners actually have ACL tears. Like I've seen it, but it's chronic degeneration of that ligament just getting demolished. Like meniscus too. Like, hey, we have knee issues because we're just blowing our knees up. One thing is if we go back to the premise of like starting from the beginning, most running injuries are chronic. They're not acute. So in that bucket of it's a chronic issue, we have to think the load that we're putting over and over again on our bodies, we have to control that load. We can't let the spike every time we hit the ground, just crazy spike up and then go even higher as we go through, we call mid stance when the foot's under your body. We need to control that loading rate. And humans are strong. We can handle the loads of running. It's again, 200 to 250% of your body weight. I weigh around 150. So that's like, it's like me barbell on my back. I got my body weight plus half of that. And I'm doing these little like mini single leg squats. It's a lot of weight with running. So we have to make sure we are putting ourselves, we're hitting the ground properly and putting ourselves in positions where that loading rate we can tolerate it. And what I mean by that is if the loading rate's too fast, that stresses our muscles too much in our joints and we it's hard to handle it. If that loading rate happens at an optimal speed, again, we can handle force. It's just when it happens too fast, we tend to have problems. So that's a big one is number one, is we have to optimize loading rates, which is in the book, chapter two is all running form. And so I pretty much think if you can optimize your running form, you're optimizing loading rates. There's a second thing, but do you have any questions on that, Denny, before I keep going?
No, I mean, I think it makes sense to me, but as we kind of were talking about a little bit, I think before we got officially started, sometimes it's, cause we're kind of speaking a lot of the same language from my athletic training background and your physical therapy background.
Yeah.
Sometimes it maybe doesn't make as much sense to everyone else. So, but I'm not sure I have a good question to ask to try to break it down further.
Yeah. So
let's continue and we'll see if I can come up with something to break it down a little bit more if we need to.
And if anyone's confused, like what loading rate is, just think it's the it's force on your body. It's like if I try and, if I'm lifting a weight, there's a loading rate of how fast I move. That's think about like power. It's the force times speed. The faster you move it, the more power there is. The faster that force goes through your body, the higher that loading rate is going to be. It's almost like if you land with a stiff leg versus you bend your knees and cushion it, that's the difference. You don't want to land with a stiff leg because it's all that force goes through your body so fast versus you're cushioning the blow.
Just to further, I think I'm on the right wavelength here, but again, just to make sure, would that be why some folks might say it's harder on the body to run on like concrete asphalt versus a trail? Because the trail is going to be a little bit softer, so there's going to be a little bit slower load time?
Yeah, it's a little bit more forgiving. We tend to find that you'll adapt to the surface that you're on. So that can affect things, but a lot of times your body, if you know you're on concrete, your knees actually might bend a little bit more because you know you're on a hard surface, so you're actually going to cushion it more. So, and to think of it again, it's like if I throw a water balloon at you, Denny, you're not just going to hold your hands out and catch it. You're going to wiggle it so it doesn't explode. Remember, ask me that again because it talks about like shoes and cushion and how that affects things. But that's one big thing loading rate is a problem. And that loading rate is like is a massive reason for running related injuries because all that load is happening so fast. And the second thing is if your body's not in a good position. So this is partly running form, partly some other things, but let's say you're running and your knee is, your ankle is stiff. It's probably the best example, right? Like when you were running, I'll see if I can actually, I got my stool here. If I'm running, my knee is going to go through some bending. If I can't get my knee over toe motion the right way, like typically I got a shoe here, your knee is probably going to be around this area. It might go slightly past it, depending on what surface you're on. If you can't get enough knee over toe motion, you're going to compensate. And that might be your knee caves in or your foot twists out excessively. You might even have a hip drop or something else going on. And essentially what's happening is when you have that knee cave in, well, now certain tissues, ligaments, muscles are being stretched more than they should. We call that strain. So muscles will want to be in an optimal position and they contract and they relax and then you get force output. If they're already pre-stretched, it's harder to use that muscle, and then you load your joints more, and then you're just the right word is straining, but you're just thinking your muscle's already stretched out, and now you're asking it to contract. Again, 250% of your body weight, it's very challenging for that muscle and your body to work the right way. So I think of almost like you're squatting, and your knee caves in every time you squat. Like I think most coaches and most trainers would be like, hey, keep that knee tracking over the toe because it's turning your glutes off, right? You're stressing. You're probably going to put a lot of stress on your outside of your knee, that lateral knee, and you might stress to strain that meniscus as well. So it's taking principles that we do with lifters, but also with running form, we take these principles of we want to make sure we have a standard for how you move, and if you're out of that standard, we might want to fix that, you know, within limits. So number one thing is loading rate. Number two is making sure your body is moving the way it should. And you can imagine too, Denny, if your knee caves in and you're overstriding, your loading rate's going crazy up, that's a recipe for disaster. Of no wonder why your knee's killing you. Like you're overstriding and your knee's caving in. Like we got to fix that.
Mm-hmm. And not to get lost in that, not to overlook the obvious, but like you talked about, you know, if you're lifting, if you're squatting and you've got all this weight and your form isn't right, your knee caves in, your knee does something that it's not supposed to, you know, in theory, or at least potentially, you know, our bodies are pretty adaptable. Our bodies are pretty strong. Like we might could get away with it for, especially if it's not like a one rep max, we might could get away with it for 3 sets of 10. We might could get away with it for, for 5 sets of 5 or whatever we're doing strength wise. But when you're talking about running, you might could get away with it for a mile. You might could get away with it for 2 miles. Yeah. But if you're running, you know, for an hour, I don't know exactly what everybody's stride rate would be, but probably close to 10,000 steps for that 1 hour of running times whatever, 3 times a week, 4 times a week, 5 times a week, times 12 months, times, you know, at some point that stress just becomes like, it's not the one, which is going back to the point of more often than not chronic injuries versus acute things that happen over time. But it's just this, if you don't fix the problem, because like, oh, there's not a problem. Eventually there might be a problem because it's you know, death by 1,000 paper cuts for mixing metaphors.
Yeah. And that's the kind of the insidious part about it is, right? Like, let's say you're squatting when your knee caves in, you keep doing that. Again, you might get away with it for a while until you hit that one rep max of 300 pounds and then your knee tweaks, which is, it's probably a little bit, you know, you might be a little more catastrophic than if you were just running and you start to feel it. But it's, I think we could definitely do a better job of, hey, you're running a certain way, that the knee caving in, the hip dropping, we want to fix that because we know this is, no, it's going to cause issues in the future, even though you don't have any pain right now, right? Like, you're fine. And which is a lot of runners I do see, they're like, hey, my knee hurts. They're in that pain phase. But if we can catch things beforehand and we can fix things before and not have to, you know, stress that tissue before it gives you issues, no, didn't mean to rhyme that, but yeah, you want to stress tissue before it gives you issues, like that, I think that would be huge. And it would save people, it would save them time, it would save them money, it would save them a lot of things that they can, again, because I know people love spending money on races, like spend that money on races versus, hey, now you got to go to physio because your knee's killing you a week before your marathon or 2 weeks before your marathon. Like that, and that was a lot of motivation for the book of like, all that stuff is like, yeah, we do that in the business too, but I'm like, man, if someone can get a head start on, they record themselves running or they work with someone who's doing gait assessments and they see that knee excessively caving in or they're crossing over or they're too bouncy, like we know over time those are going to cause issues. Let's fix that. Just like when you're squatting and deadlifting, like if you're deadlifting and your back's rounding, like we want to correct that before you start deadlifting 400 pounds. Like that's a recipe for back pain. So it's the same principles that we're applying from lifting to runners that I just see, especially with running form, that a lot of people aren't talking about this.
So I think that's a great place to kind of go back to part of that initial windup of the question, of why are we so terrible then at focusing on the prevention? Like we as runners, but also maybe we as humans. I mean, you know, like you got to beg people to, you know, to take it completely out of running, but you got to beg people to go get their colonoscopies. You got to beg people to go get their mammograms. You got to beg people to go get their skin cancer screenings and various other health things and whatever. But like, you know, in all those instances, it's a lot easier if you can catch the cancers or the diseases or the whatever. You catch it early, the treatment process is quicker, it's theoretically less painless, it's a smoother timetable, it costs less money. And I mean the same things apply with, you know, if you got a nagging IT band or nagging whatever, like if you can catch it early, you can probably keep running, maybe not even any reduction in training volume at all and address it and yada yada yada. So why, and maybe it's more philosophical than a good answer, but like why can't we as runners get it through our thick skulls that like it's worth the time and the effort and maybe the small investment financially to address things proactively versus waiting until we have a problem and now we got to throw everything at it with MRIs and treatments and potential surgeries and yada yada yada.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, from my personal experience, when I'm, and I mean, even as a physio, and like, I'm a running expert, and I still fall prey to this sometimes. I'm like, I can just run through it; it'll go away. It's almost like you have to like feel it multiple times, and it has to. I think a lot of people get to the point where they're like, ooh, it's been chronic and it's getting worse. Now I should go check this out. Which I get it. Like, you know, when I run, sometimes I get a little twinge, and I'm like, that was my knee. Let me monitor that. Let me see what happens. That could definitely be from, hey, I'm doing something wrong. Sometimes they just happen, and that's, you know, a niggle, whatever we call it. But I think I'm pretty stubborn, and I'm like, I can fix this on my own. I'll be fine. And it's sometimes you can, sometimes you can't, and it catches up to you. But I think that is a good question. Why are we so bad at not just treating them, but like we have an issue. Why do we just keep running through it? I don't know. I think it's probably because it's not that big of an issue to start with. And then we keep running and we increase the intensity and then it becomes a bigger issue. And we're like, oh man, this is not fun. It's probably because of that. Cause hey, we think we can get away with it. We're busy. We don't want to make time for it until it forces us to make time. But that's my best guess.
Maybe this is the same question from a different angle and not something that I've seen as much lately, but it's also maybe because I don't run with other people as consistently anymore as I used to. But I've known a few folks, great folks, good friends. That have basically been on a, you know, insert running injury here, but a pattern of, you know, run for 6 months, train up for a race, and then have to take time off due to, you know, shin splints.
Yeah.
You know, take 6 weeks off, heal it up, maybe do some PT, maybe just rest until things start to feel better. Sign up for another race, train for six months, shin splints again. I mean, rinse and repeat by, you know, whether it's 6 months, 8 months, like we're not going to get a year of running together before it's always the same injury. It's always the same thing that bubbles back up. I'm of the view that most of those running things probably can be prevented or at least very much minimized. But in that scenario, and again, maybe we're playing amateur, you know, psychologists here and maybe that's not what we're supposed to be doing, but like, why can't we, as medical professionals in the running field, get through to some of these runners that, like, you don't need to be dealing with shin splints every time you train for a marathon, or you don't need to be dealing with IT band or plantar fasciitis or whatever it is. Yet some people, it just seems like, again, they just have it in their mind that that's part of training for a marathon, is I'm going to have my shin splints, or I'm going to have my IT band issues.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like I'm expecting to have the pain.
And then it's become a self-fulfilling prophecy, because you expect it's going to be there. And then, oh, by the way, it does.
Yeah. Like, all right, time to just run through pain, and it is what it is. Yeah. I think, physical therapy is I think we're probably, you know, part of this too. That's why I opened up Alpha Project Physio to steer away from that. Is I think a lot of it is very reactive. You have the shin splint. Okay, now we'll address it. Which again, I don't know if I keep going in circles, but it's like, hey, I had the shin splint. Okay, let's address it. And there's not as much of that carryover into, here's what you should, if you're serious about running and you want, like, if you want to keep doing this until you're, you know, 50, 60, 70, because, you know, I can, 30 and 20 year olds and even 40 year olds, you probably get away with, I can band myself up for 6 months, I'll be fine. When you get older, it's going to be much more challenging to do that. Like, there's a stat in the book that I list all the Boston Marathon finishers. I think it was 2022 or 2020. I forgot what year it was, but it wasn't the COVID year. I know that, but it said how many people finished from each age group. And I think once you get past, I think 50 or 60 or something, it just, dramatically, like, exponentially drops off every year. And I think, like, maybe the most common was like 30 to 45. I forgot what the age group was, but it just dramatically drops off. So you can get away with that for a while, but it's going to be more challenging to continue to run if you really want to do that for life and for a long time. If you keep just run reactively, treat it temporarily, and then take a rest, which of course is going to feel better when you're not running, and then you just rinse and repeat that cycle. Like, there are things you can do to prevent that from happening. We can prevent that from happening. You don't have to go through that cycle.
Right. Yeah. I agree. Yeah, hopefully if there's anybody listening that has been on that cycle and you think that's just the natural part of it, get the book. Or just, you know, there's so many good resources out there. The book is one of them, but it doesn't have to be the case. So let's get to the book a little bit more. We touched on this a little bit before when you were still in the kind of the early days, I think, or at least in the beginning phases of writing. If anybody who's written a book before, they know it's a lot of days. It's a lot of phases. It's a process. But remind everybody, and I think we've kind of touched on it a little bit here, but just, you know, get to straight to the point. Why did you decide to write Built to Run?
I felt that, you know, I started the business around 4 years ago. We've been growing fairly steadily, Denny. I mean, started out just runners. My wife, she's in the business now. She solely does pelvic floor physical therapy, which we get a lot of runners who, you know, they run and they pee themselves and they're pre-postpartum and they have issues with that going on, and their core's turned off from having a few kids. So she, you know, we kind of collaborate on that end of it. But the book was, as we're growing, I'm realizing, I'm like, man, I can post on social media. I love doing podcasts. I love reaching more people and providing value. But, like, what's the ultimate thing I can do that we can do to reach more people and help more people? And as I learned more about books, it just kept going back to books. A book is that vessel that, you know, there are some new concepts in it by all means, but, you know, a properly structured book and, you know, the guide that we have, which you can call it a textbook, but it's a easily digestible guide of running form, mobility, strength, how to activate your arches, how to breathe the right way, counter rotation, and then how to rotate, and then how to treat common running injuries. It's things that are spoken in a language that all runners should be able to understand, but also, like, high level knowledge that's digestible. And I realized that books are supposed to be, at least guides like this are, it's all this info that I've learned, accumulated, which, you know, my life's work, I guess, into this vessel that people can understand. Like, so it's like taking a chunk of my brain and be like, here, boom, here's all these things I know about running that I know are going to help you. So it was a question of how can I provide more value, the book. And I'm like, as big of a hurdle as it is, because a lot of people, they start a book and they never finish it. No, they're afraid of people are going to judge them. They're afraid of all these things. And I'm like, get over those fears, because if I don't do this book, it's almost like a disservice to people. I'm like, and part of me is like, I can make this thing 500 pages, but I want to get it out now. It's around 290. It's almost 300 pages. It's filled with knowledge. And if I felt like if I didn't do this, it would be a disservice to runners and really just like humanity. Like, we need to treat runners better. And this book, I'm like, this is a way I can give back and help runners.
Yeah, it's like I've said already, it's really good. And I think I mentioned this before we officially got recording. We were just chatting a little bit at the beginning. But it does a really commendable job. You did a very commendable job, Matt, at writing it in a way, like you said, to give a lot of knowledge, give a lot of great information, but not be so technical that you don't need a PhD to understand it, right? You don't need to be a physical therapist. You don't need to be an athletic trainer. You don't need to have all kinds of anatomy classes and physiology classes and really have a deep understanding. Like, you're a runner. You understand your body enough to know some of what's going on. You can read through the book and gain so much that's going to help you. One thing from the very beginning part of the book, or early in the book, that made me chuckle a little bit, but I just want to read this one little section under the heading of what this book will not teach you. I cannot stress this enough, you say, but there is no quick fix for most running injuries. The information in this book works, and it works very well. However, it takes time and energy to see results. You will not learn one exercise to magically and immediately solve your running problem. And I don't know that I have a good question. Like, I mean, I have a dozen questions I could ask off of that in terms of like, why do we suck at patience? Why are we always, you know? But it's a human condition, right? We want order something. I've been complaining lately about Amazon. Like, I order something and it's going to take 5 days to get here. It's like, why the hell am I paying for Prime if it's going to take me 5 days to get? Like yeah. You know, part of the reason I pay for Prime is because I want it here in a day and a half or 2 days. You know, we all want things now. But when it comes to our bodies, whether it's changing your form and working on improving mobility, things like that, whether it's building the strength, building the resilience to be able to resist the loading forces and to avoid injuries, none of those things happen overnight. Like, they take time, they take effort, they take repetition, you know, kind of like training for whatever race you're training for. So, you know, kind of going back to something we've sort of hinted at, if you're going to be serious about doing this for the long term, you've got to be willing to put in the time and the effort consistently, not only in training, but also in building up your strength and your resilience and taking care of your body.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like in the intro, I'm like, I need to, like, people need to know what the book's about. So not a quick fix. And I almost think like you can have two buckets of your thought process with running. One is your training and, like, you know, your what mileage are you going to do, your interval work today, repetition work, threshold, tempo, whatever it is. Like, that's one brain at one box. The other box is, what can I do to keep myself healthy to be able to do all those workouts? And I don't even think I mentioned this in the book. I thought of this as you were talking. Of like, I almost would rather have somebody say, like, yeah, I'm training for a marathon and I'm putting all this time in here. Take 10% of that out and put it in the other bucket, and that's going to help you in the long run actually have more volume on the other bucket. So that's I don't mean to ramble here, but if all the time you have is dedicated to running, and it's all your free time, take 10% of it, put it towards stuff in the book or like stuff to keep you running. It's going to give you a lot more longevity.
Yeah. And then almost devil's, I don't know if it's devil's advocate is the right way to say it, but to counteract any little pushback that somebody might be given, if I take 10% of my training time away, isn't that going to hinder my performance for my race? Probably not. But let's say, and I would love to get your thought on this too, Matt. Let's say, okay, it might limit your performance in that next race just a little bit. You might not quite get to what you could have if you had dedicated 100% of time to that training. The second race down the line, in theory, maybe even probably, is going to be even better because less likely to have injury, more likely to have balanced fitness, improved mobility, all these types of things. So again, if we're only looking at it for the next 12 weeks to build to this one race, maybe. But if we're talking about the next 20 years of running, I mean, that 10% taken away from your training time is it's an investment, right? It's a compounding investment that's going to pay off in spades down the road.
Yeah, and again, if this is like, hey, you work a full-time job, you have kids, like, that's what I'd recommend. I know some runners that, like, they're pro runners and they just they can set aside time for that, which is great. But yeah, I would even argue, like, if you're doing like running is a single leg hop over and over again, it's actually a jump. So if you actually strength train and you do some jump training and power training, it'll probably actually make you more efficient at running, and you actually might run faster. Right. So in the long run, in the short run, you might run faster. In the long run, you'll definitely run faster and keep injuries away. So there's a side of this. When you do the right things, not only will you probably run faster times, but you'll also keep injuries away at the same time. So it's a win-win, but we just have to change the mindset of all I do is run, which you can run. You have to, you know, you can't just bike and be a good runner. Like, yes, the biking works your heart, but running works your heart, and it's sport specific. So you have to run, but we can add these things on that are going to be buffers for, it's almost like, you play like a video game or something, right? Like when I was a kid, I'd played, I don't even know what game it is, but you play a game and you suit up, got your armor on, and then most of that stuff is running, but you get little add-ons, little bonus things that make you even stronger and, you know, help you resist, I don't know, if someone attacks you or something. And that's just like the kid brain of me when I was 10 years old playing World of Warcraft or something.
For sure. Just want to dig into, or at least maybe not dig into, skim the surface of a couple of chapters in the book that I feel like, quite frankly, and once again, I can't oversell this book, y'all. Like it is a good book, great resource, something that you'll love to have on your shelf, good to read through, good to reference back to. But some of the areas are things that we've talked about, that Matt, you and I, we've talked about a lot in the first episode in terms of strength training, some of the form cues, things like that. And certainly, you know, are things that probably aren't totally unfamiliar to a lot of folks. Not that they're not important, but to kind of gloss over those to get into a couple other areas that maybe don't get talked about as much, or at least I haven't heard talked about as much. One of them is chapter 3, mobility for runners. And this is something that's kind of near and dear to me because it's something I've been trying to invest some more time into and work on a little bit more. Because I have long, I don't want to say believed in the stereotype, but I've long been part of the stereotype of runners are unflexible people. Just stiff, can't touch my toes. And I think maybe I've even, I don't want to say confused, but maybe used interchangeably the terms flexibility and mobility. What's, I don't know. I mean, maybe we'll just start there. What's the difference between flexibility, goodness gracious, flexibility and mobility when it comes to just kind of in general, what are those and how did, is there a difference that we need to be concerned about or aware of as runners?
Yeah. And that is a fantastic question because people often lump them together, like flexibility, mobility, range of motion, same thing. I'll add range of motion on there as well. So think range of motion as your joint. Let's say my shoulder, I'll see if I can sideways. I can bend sideways here or move sideways. Like shoulder flexion. Can I get my shoulder all the way overhead and not be limited here? And if you don't have that range of motion, like pressing weight overhead, that's going to be challenging. So range of motion is, do you have the normal physiological range of motion to move your joint through what it's supposed to, what's within normal for most humans, what we can move through? Flexibility is your muscle's ability to stretch within a normal range. You know, like think like a bell curve. So range of motion is just your joint can move. Flexibility is the muscle's ability to stretch and then contract back. And think of mobility as an all-inclusive term where those are lumped into. So the box is called mobility, right? We have the mobility box. Range of motion's in there, flexibility's in there. And then the third one is tissue quality. So think of like Jaded Cherry has a great example of this. I always give him credit because I use it, but Jaded Cherry taught me this. When you have a garden hose, right? Think of like your muscle's going to have a force output and the muscle's the garden hose. The water is going to be that force output, or even the force output and the range of motion and the flexibility of it, or I should say flexibility. Imagine now there's a knot in the garden hose. That's tissue quality. You have a tissue. You can say scar tissue. The tissue's all just jumbled up. The fascia, the muscle itself, whatever the tissue is, there's a big knot in it. And now you try and squeeze the nozzle, no water's coming out. You lost that water pressure. So now you have less force output, and that muscle's probably not going to move through the physiological range of motion that it should. So it's going to lose flexibility anyway. So in that mobility box, we have range of motion, we have flexibility, we have mobility, and there's also you can have neural tension. Like if you have your nervous system is really on edge, it can actually limit your range of motion. And there's different ways to improve that. There's like contract, relax, called PNF, fancy words that I explain in the book. But those three are probably the most common. Is you have mobility, and essentially what that is mobility is you have the range of motion. Your muscles can stretch the way they have the stretch and contraction that they should have, but also the tissue quality is the quality that it needs to be. So that's why a lot of people love, like, they run and then they foam roll, or they use the stick and they're like, ah, it's really tender. Well, a lot of times when you're running, you're slightly tearing tissue, right? I mean, marathon, you're tearing tissue. Like, and that's why you're so sore for a week after. You tear the tissue, your body rebuilds it in response to that. The problem is, there's also a lot of metabolic waste too that's released, but the problem is, it's almost like if I punched a hole in the drywall, your body is the cheapest contractor ever. It repairs the wall, but it makes it look not so good. It's not painted. You know there was a hole there. So as a runner, the big thing that I think would benefit runners is learning how to that tissue stiffness or tissue quality, which is inside of the mobility box. You can use the stick, but I'm a big fan of lacrosse balls, using kettlebells, using barbells to actually roll out tissues, adding movement to them. That's where you're actually doing you're sanding it, you're making it look the same color. You're really, that tissue will heal, but it might heal. I don't want to say scar tissue, but it's healed in a not optimal way where that tissue is not going to contract and relax the way it should. You're healing the tissue with a couple of very small knots in it, like that garden hose. So when we talk about mobility, it's all those things all in one. And for runners, yes, I guess you don't need as much range of motion in certain joints. Other joints, it's the ankle and the hip. You need a massive amount of hip extension and a massive amount of ankle dorsiflex, which is the knee over toe motion. You need a lot of range of motion for certain movements. But the big thing is we have to have tissues that can contract and don't have all those knots in them.
Okay, time to throw myself under the bus. I do not have massive dorsiflexion in my ankle. And for those that don't speak dorsiflexion, that's just, it's the opposite of pointing your toes, right? Pointing your toes is plantar flexion, pulling your toe back up towards your shin, that's dorsiflexion. So kind of making that 90 degree angle, or what we probably want is more like about 120, 130 degree angle when we pull our foot up, something like that. Or I guess it'd be less than, it'd be the acute. Anyway, whatever. Point being, you want to have more dorsiflexion than what I have. I've been trying to work on this. I've been trying to do some things with you know, massaging and foam rolling and digging into my calves and my Achilles tendon to try to loosen things up there. Obviously doing some stretching, et cetera, trying to do some joint work with bands and, you know, some of the Kelly Starrett stuff from, Supple Leopard and Mobility for Runners. But is there, What am I doing to myself? I almost think you kind of touched on this earlier when we were talking about force loading and whatnot. But if I don't work on improving my dorsiflexion, if I don't start to get a little bit more flex in the ankle and can get my knee out over my toes when I'm running, things like that, or just, you know, some of that natural movement. You know, what's the long term issues that I'm going to be having to deal with if I don't get on top of this stuff pretty soon?
Yeah, think of like if I have a box here, like optimal running, like I have a box of all this, or it's almost like a chart, right? Optimal running, all these branches off the chart are all the chapters in the book, and all those, like, mobility can cause issues that are going to affect your running, and strength can cause issues that are going to affect your running. So if your ankle's stiff, there's a load of compensations. For instance, I mean, it could be, I want to know why it's stiff, because it could be the joint. I actually didn't talk about joint capsule. Joint capsule can be, that's another box in mobility, but it could be the joint, could be the muscle, the tissue length of the calf. It could be the you know, you could have a caned garden hose. Your calf could be a caned garden hose. There's so many reasons why you have that limited knee over toe motion. So what was the question again, Denny? Sorry.
Well, just that correct? I'm working on it, but if I don't, you know, am I going to, what am I setting myself up for failure wise?
Yeah, that's where we talked in the beginning of it. It goes full circle back to your running of, you're going to have some running compensations. So think of it, the only reason we want to improve mobility is, well, I guess there's a few reasons. Number one is we want the tissues to be able to contract the way they should, be forceful, but also we want to put you in the ranges of motion that we know you're going to need as a runner. And for the ankle, you need a lot of that knee over toe motion. I mean, if you look at like Olympic caliber, like marathoners and 5Kers, they have, I mean, it's close to 30 degrees. I'm like, there it's a lot of, which is, that's essentially 120 if you're looking the other way.
Right,
that's
where I came up with 120 before. I was looking at the angle coming the other direction.
Yeah. So 120, whatever, 30, you can call it 120 or 30. But it's a lot. And I think, remember reading in school, it was only like 20. And I'm like, really? Only 20 degrees? But you need a lot of ink. It might even be more for some people, depending on the surface that they're on, because you might want to, if you're on a hard surface, you might compress a little bit more to get to, you know, that blue water balloon's coming at you. But think of, if you have a lack of that ankle mobility, you're going to compensate some way, and it could be your knee. It could be your knee caves in. a lot of times you try to get that from the Achilles, and now you stretch out your Achilles, now you have Achilles tendinopathy, Achilles tendinosis issue. So that itself, like the things that are insidious of, hey, I don't have the knee over toe motion, I keep running, then you start to have the pain. Well, you might have knee pain, but the root cause of that was the ankle. You might have hip pain, but the root cause of that was the ankle, if that makes sense, or the calf.
Yeah, no, it totally does. And not that we're going to dig into this too much, but something that has been talked about before, and you know, the knee bone is connected to the hip bone, and it's connected to the arm bone. It's everything is so well connected. And I know from my athletic training days how often that, you know, there's a hip issue that it's connected to something in the shoulder blade. Even on, especially maybe not so much for runners, but for overhead athletes, for pitchers, for volleyball players, things like that. Something in the ankle that affects the opposite side knee, or just the way we compensate, the way we try to deload one thing to protect it means we have to load up something heavier on another part of the body, another part of the tissue. And a lot of times where the pain is or where the deficit is, and where you're feeling the symptoms may sometimes they're the same. A lot of times,
yes,
it's not the same.
Yeah, there's a rule that's above and below. So if you have knee pain, you always want to look below. You always want to look above. If you have low back pain, I'm looking here because we get a lot of rotation when we run in the thoracic spine where the rib cage is. So low back pain, I'm looking at hips and I'm looking at the middle of the back. And there's so many runners that are they're running and they have that forward head and they caved in here, which, you know, we can talk about why that's happening, but chapter six is counter rotation, where we have to know how to rotate. And if we're all locked up here and we're leaned forwards, well, that can cause, now we can't rotate the right way through space as we move forwards. And that can actually cause knee issues, because now you're kicking out to the side. Like that's a little bit more in depth thing. It's hard to understand it just by talking about it. But man, we have to make sure that if you have pain somewhere, we can look above and below. Those are the most common sites of why you're having, you know, back pain, knee pain, even ankle pain. You can look above and below of what's actually causing that.
Well, that's a perfect segue, because the other chapter I wanted to touch on at least a little bit was chapter six and talking about the spine. I mean, I don't know that this is the first time I've heard anybody talking about it as a part of a running health and improved running performance. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. Certainly not a place that I've heard people talk about much, and certainly not something that's very often been on my radar. Like, you know, I've talked about, we talked about last time about upper body and how your upper body is important with lower body and just having some strength on your upper back, your arms, shoulders, things like that. But the spine, I think it's, and the core, I mean, just the trunk in general, maybe sometimes gets short shrift. Why, you know, to keep it as simple as possible, why is the torso, the trunk, the spine and everything kind of coming off of it, important to pay attention to for us as runners? And again, we kind of just talked about it a little bit, but let's dig into it just a little bit more before we wrap up today.
Yeah, think of as you move forwards, we're not robots, right? Like we don't just move in the front, this plane that's forwards and backwards. We have this arm swing that if you're sprinting, we can get away with being very vertical, but or very forward and backwards. But when we're running, we create a lot of efficiency, and your body has to work less hard if we're able to what's called counter rotation, which is as your spine rotates one way, your upper back rotates one way, your pelvis rotates the opposite way. So it's almost like you're when you're twisting, it's like a DNA, like the DNA molecule. It's like it's twisted, and then it twists the other way, and you keep doing that as you run. So as you're running forwards, you're doing this counter rotation that helps you move fluidly through space. It actually helps you get that leg behind you. So it essentially helps you. It just helps you move efficiently. And if you don't have that rotation, whether it's at the hips or the middle of the back, we tend to see someone actually have this like lateral, like they move too much side to side. But if you don't have that rotation, A, running's not going to be as efficient. But B, we tend to load the other joints. So other joints try to take over. Could be like the, not the pelvis, but the hip takes over. But we commonly see a lot of people that have knee issues because they're kicking out to the side, it loads that. We didn't talk too much about it, but there's a ground reaction force that goes side to side. That goes up, and then it loads your body more. So now you have the loading rate from the side to side direction. Now that's loading you excessively now.
Yeah. And then – yeah, it's just again, you don't think about it until somebody kind of points it out. But you know, I mean, like think about how awkward it is when you try to move your left arm and your left leg at the same time. When you're walking, when you're running, like naturally your left leg goes forward, your right arm goes forward. And then that's that counter rotation that you were talking about. But yeah, you know, if your body's not doing that when you're trying to run, like it's just, it happens so much below the level that you think about. I mean, which so many things our bodies do, they happen subconsciously. Our bodies just do what they do. But if it's not functioning properly, yeah, it's gonna try to adapt. It's gonna try to compensate. Maybe you're gonna have some type of internal rotation somewhere that you don't want, and then yeah, you're just asking for problems later. So, are there how much motion are we looking for in the spine? You know, I mean, some rotational movement and things like that. But like how do we know what's okay and what's not enough? If that makes sense.
That's a good question. That's a really good question. I don't know if I have numbers off that off the top of my head. I know when I'm testing it, we're looking to see you have 45 degrees of rotation here and at the pelvis. So my gut is we want like 90 ish. I get back to you on that. That's a good question. Okay. I should have came more prepared, man. That's a good question.
I'm never trying to ask gotcha questions here, but this is another one of those where I kind of like, in my quest for improved mobility, it's a lot of ankle, a lot of hip, and a lot of kind of upper back thoracic area, because it's just mid back, I guess, thoracic area, where it's just like, you know, whether it's yoga, whether it's mobility drills, whatever, it's not a pretty picture when I'm doing these things. And so it's something that I'm working on. Anyway, we could keep digging into it as in all levels, but at some point we got to wrap this up, and maybe that's as good a spot as any. Like, you know, just for everybody's reference, you know, we talked about mobility. We talked about kind of the thoracic area there, kind of the spinal area, but just a couple of the other chapters, just so you know what you're getting yourself into. Running form, and Matt mentioned that a little bit, and strength training. Well, like I said, we talked about that before. We'll talk about it again, but there's lots of good stuff in there in terms of drills and things to do. Optimizing your feet, taking care of your feet, pretty important piece of the puzzle for us as runners. Breathing, common running injuries. So many good things in this book, y'all. You need to get yourself a copy ASAP. Get into it, dig into it, utilize it. I'm going to skip the philosophical question, Matt, which, you know, that doesn't happen very often. But the final question I'm going to ask you, or, you know, just is more of going to just open the floor for you. Not to sell us on the book. I mean, I'll sell the people on the book. That's fine. But just kind of, you know, what obviously you talked before about writing the book as a way to get the word out to more people, to help more runners, things like that. What's your, I don't want to say your big takeaway, because I mean, the whole bloody thing is a takeaway. The whole thing is a really, really good book. But just, you know, final thoughts on the book, final thoughts on the work you did. And just anything else that you want to say that we haven't touched on about the book, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I think like writing the book for me was the book I wish I had had when I was younger, you know, running, having a bunch of injuries pop up, and that stuck with me for a while. I'm like, I don't want to just write a book. I'd want to write a book that I wish I had had when I was a younger runner, but a runner who was in pain, didn't know what to do, seen PT, PT didn't work, you've had knee pain for 10 years, everything you do is a short-term effect. So I wish that's kind of my philosophy going into it, was I really want to write a book that I wish I had when I was younger and I was injured, because I know what it's like.
Yeah. Well, it's a book that, like I said earlier, you gave me a little sneak peek at it, and it's something I'm going to be continuing to reference over and over and over again, because it's really good. Y'all, once again, the title, Built to Run, The Runner's Guide to Fixing Common Injuries, Resolving Pain, Optimizing Running Performance Now and for Life. It's available now, clearly on Amazon. Any other places, Matt? Is it mostly on Amazon, or can we get it wherever books are sold? What's the locations for it?
I would, the best place to get it would be at alphaprojectphysio.com. So okay, you can type in alphaprojectphysio.com. The Built to Run tab should say right there, say the book or Built to Run. And if you get it from the website, we send you a special gift as well instead of Amazon. So I highly recommend you get it from the website. And if you type in the code Built to Run, you'll get the discount code Built to Run. You'll get 15% off. So check it out.
Rock on. We will definitely make sure the link in the show notes is to the website versus to Amazon, because, hey, Bezos is doing all right. He doesn't need to take a cut of your profits. Like, he's doing fine. buy the book from Matt himself. Get yourself the extra bonus. Get yourself the discount code. But again, alphaprojectphysio.com is the website. Physio with a Z, at alphaprojectphysio on Instagram, at Matt Silver PT, all one word on Instagram. 1094 if you want to check out round one, get a little bit more of Matt's backstory and some more of the running form conversation that we didn't talk about today, some strength training stuff we didn't talk about today. That's all in round one. Dizruns.com/1231. We'll get you back to the show notes for today. Links to the book, links to things we talked about today. Goodness gracious. So many things as always. We'll dig up whatever links we can find, photos, the whole nine as per usual. So, Matt, thank you for taking the time. Thanks for being gracious with me because I had some tech issues when we were getting started. So we were a little bit late getting started, but I appreciate you bearing with me.
Yeah, man.
And more, I don't want to say most importantly, but equally importantly, thank you for writing a great book that is certainly going to help hundreds, thousands of runners. It's that good. And just hat tip to you. Kudos to a job well done. And hopefully we can do this again at some point down the road. But thanks again for the time today and nothing but the best to you going forward, my friend.
Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right, y'all. Thanks so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Matt and myself. And as per usual, be curious to know what stood out to you from today's episode. What was your takeaway du jour? Du jour. For me, there's a whole host of things, as is often the case, especially when I'm talking to other coaches or PTs or, you know, anybody in kind of the health exercise science space. There's always so many things that I want to get to that we don't get to, this, that, and the other. But the takeaway for me today wasn't maybe a specific thing that was said, wasn't maybe a specific thing that was talked about, but it was just the reminder of something that I believe in. But, so, you know, sometimes I can lose sight of the obvious, or at least what to me is obvious. And it's just how interconnected everything is within our body. And I know we kind of touched on it there just a little bit with, you know, sometimes the pain can be in one place, but the origination of the pain or the cause of the pain is somewhere else. But, you know, even just as much as like making sure our torsos are rotating appropriately, and we've got the counter rotation forces going on. And if you don't know what that means, I mean, that's fine. Obviously, get the book, read about it. It'll make perfect sense when you start to read it and see some of the figures and photos and things like that. But just, I mean, you know, like I said, talking to Matt, I don't know that I've ever really thought about the role that not only, I mean, yes, core stability, but also core rotation, hip rotation, you know, trunk rotation, the role of the spine and what that does for us as runners. Never thought about that, but of course it does. I mean, it makes perfect sense. The more I talk about it and read about it in Matt's book, but just, I mean, just how interconnected we are. It's ridiculous. And not just physically, you know, but how mental health and emotional health and how that, you know, how those aspects of our lives can impact our running. Obviously diet, that plays a big part of things, fueling our bodies appropriately, but you know, sicknesses, work stresses, just stress in general, different life stresses, everything impacts everything else. It's an ecosystem. And again, I mean, I've talked about this before. I believe it. I never have questioned it. But just in talking to Matt and how he's broken things down and transitional forces and rotational forces and, just all the things that we touched on today was just, it just kind of kept bubbling back to my head during the conversation that like, yeah, it's all connected. It really, truly is. And so, you know, that's why I love Matt's book so much, or one of the many reasons is because it connects some of these seemingly disparate dots and makes you go, oh yeah, you know, if I want to improve my running, yeah, maybe some of the mobility things are helpful. Maybe I do need to work on mobilizing my vertebrae a little bit, he says, because that's something he needs to work on as well. So anyway, just how interconnected we are was my big takeaway from today. One of many big takeaways for me today. What about you? What stood out to you from today's episode? As always, if you're willing to share it, I would love to hear it. At DizRuns on all the social medias, DizRuns@gmail.com if you'd rather shoot me an email. And of course, if you want to head back over to the show notes for today, DizRuns.com/1231. DizRuns.com/1231 will get you back to the show notes for today. Photos, links, the whole nine as per usual, and including that comment section down there at the bottom. And, you know, I tried to not oversell it too much in the interview, although I brought it up several times. The book is good, y'all. The book is good. Get yourself a copy. Thank me later. Thank Matt later. It will help you especially those of you that have, you know, have ambitions of running for the next 20, 30, 40, maybe even 50 years of your life, maybe even more than that. You know, maybe don't really want to be greedy, but, you know, wouldn't mind another 50 plus years of running in my life. And Built to Run is going to help me be successful there. It will help you as well. So get yourself a copy. And while I'm sure it's going to be available on Amazon, or I'm sure it is available on Amazon, like Matt said, order it from him. Use the discount code that he gave you. Built to Run was the code. And again, that information is all in the show notes for today. But order it from his link. Order it from him. Get the special gift. Get the discount code. You know, just there's nothing wrong with cutting Bezos out of things. He's doing fine. He ain't starving because you bought the book directly from Matt. But you know, so do it that way. One way or the other, get yourself a copy is the moral of that story. And if you want some help with some coaching things, in addition to me coaching you to buy Matt's book, which you won't regret, I'll work with you as a coach if that's something that you're interested in as well. DizRuns.com/coaching is that link. All the information is there. We've got openings at all three levels, at least as this episode goes out. But I would imagine, you know, I mean, there's always a chance that y'all could flood me, and I might be closing up shop at the moment, or at least, you know, just tapping the brakes for a bit. But I don't anticipate that happening. So if you're ready to get on board, let's get on board. DizRuns.com/coaching. And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap this one up, y'all. Thanks for the time. Thanks for the attention. Thanks for taking Matt and I with you today. Get yourself a copy of Matt's book. Once again, Built to Run is the title. Get it from his website. The link is in the blog post. And until next time, y'all, be well. Take good care. Thanks again for listening. And we'll talk soon, all right? Later, y'all.